Welcome to EA Radio. I'm Wireless Mike.
And I'm Matthew. And for this segment, we are joined by Tim Kirschbaum. Sorry about that. Of ALPA.
Happens all the time.
Thank you, Tim, for being here. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
So with ALPA, you're here to talk about transitioning from the military to the airlines. Why is that a little bit different than your standard, you know, people who just come up through general aviation?
Yes, sir. So I came from the rotary wing in the Army, and the pathway for me was 250 hours of fixed wing time, including 25 engines of multi-engine, and you're in an RJ. It was so the differences between how we operate in the military versus Part 121 flows and call-outs and everything, completely different. Never mind, you know, trying to figure out how to land an airplane at 140 knots versus coming to a hover. But, you know, it's a completely different environment. You come from a very structured military background. This is what you do on a daily basis. And, oh, by the way, we're going to call you in on Saturday because we got a broke helicopter you need to come fix. To coming into the civilian market, airline industry, you're there to do the job, then you go home and nobody calls you. It was a pretty significant change, but it was a fun change.
So what was one of the bigger challenges for you in that you didn't know that was going to be a challenge switching into the airlines?
Me personally, and a lot of my buddies that coming from the rotary wing world and the military world, you know, in the military, you have a checklist that you follow religiously. When you open it up, before start engine checks, all right, battery one on, igniters on, you know, fuel boost pumps on. The flows, memorizing the flows and call-outs and doing that sequence, completely, you know, I flew for the military for 18 years. And that was my hardest challenge. Flying the jet, yeah, there's a little bit of a, you know, you're flying and you're landing, flaps, yada, yada, yada. That kind of came. You know, air sense is air sense. You have that peripheral vision. You know what you're doing in that aspect. But, yeah, really it was the structure, Part 121 structure, that was the difficult challenge for me.
Now, we have, in the airlines, we have the flight operations manual and we have, you know, your aircraft manuals. Did you have similar kind of things in the military?
We did. So you have your regulatory documents that Big Army puts out. Then you have, when you're working in a different theater, you have your documents for that. And then you have your company, your battalion SOPs, your brigade SOPs that you got to follow. Very similar to FOM type thing. So you had a lot of different things that you had to do. They didn't repeat themselves, but you know, you get down to the brigade or battalion level SOPs. It's how you're going to ingress a target area, how you're going to go outbound from a target area, how you're going to do this, how you're going to do that. Similar structure, but completely different topics and format.
Yeah, and you also in the military, there's just a wide range of aircraft that you can be operating, from single seaters to helicopters to large transport. And now you're going to the airlines where it's, you know, it's all fixed wing and it's all crew environment. How does transitioning into a crew environment for somebody who hasn't done that before, where have you seen some good things or bad things in that?
So in the Army, for mission profiles, every helicopter is a dual pilot aircraft.
Okay.
The aircraft that I flew for the majority of my career, the OH-58 Delta, was rated as a single pilot aircraft, but you had to have another pilot on board when you're conducting mission operations. However, during my time in the military, I was a test pilot, so a lot of my maintenance checks, I'd have a crew chief on board, that single pilot environment, and it would get frustrating trying to get them to do crew coordination. So crew coordination really has made a resurgence in the military. I can't speak for the single engine or single pilot fighter pilot operations. I have heard that they're a little difficult in the beginning because they're used to running everything by themselves, but I have not personally experienced anybody that is not really good crew savvy.
Yeah, from my personal experience, flying with people who have come out of the military, I trained with one who was fresh out of a single seat, and he's super smart guy, but it was finding out what he didn't know to teach him,
right?
And just learning that he's not alone in the airplane anymore. So
yeah, big thing for us in the, you know, we always operated mission sets with the two aircraft. So you have four people to integrate with.
Sure.
But the air mission commander was the guy in charge. And so going from that, I am in charge of this formation, I am delegating what we're going to do, how we're going to ingress the target, how we're going to prosecute the target, whatever the case may be, to, well, so we got this weather up front. What do you think we need to do, John? Well, I think we should go to the right 20 degrees. Well, I think we should, you know, that aspect of crew coordination in the airline industry is a little bit different.
Now, you went from flying helicopters into a regional before moving on to a major airline. Did that help you with your transition?
You know, being in the regionals really, really helped in the very beginning. I went to a CRJ carrier, fresh out of the military. In fact, for my first 2 months being at the regional, I was still drawing an active duty paycheck, which is fantastic because, you know, regionals at that time were making $34 an hour. So,
yeah,
you know, being able to learn in an environment where, you know, they're used to getting the Embry-Riddle guys, the CFIs, they're used to guys that aren't, you know, they may be exposed a little bit to the 121 world, but they don't know how to operate in it yet.
Yeah.
That really helped out. And then at that point in time, there was a lot of rotary transition program guys that were coming through. So they were getting an idea of how we work. And I was kind of on the early side of it. So they were getting an idea of how to talk to us and how to train us. And it helped that there were a lot of us going through the program at the same time. So we could compare notes of, well, my instructor said this and my instructor said that. And that really helped. And then learning on the RJ, I found learning on the RJ, I could apply the skills that I learned on the RJ. Even landing an A330 is similar to landing a CRJ-900, you know? I think that really helped out going to the regional first.
And from ALPA's, do they have any support specifically for helping people transition from the military to a airline?
So we have our Veteran Affairs Committee, which I'm the ALPA National Membership Chair. Beneath me, I've got the Furlough Support Network, and then I've got Veteran Affairs. So a lot of times we'll get guys fresh out of the military having some issues with veteran stuff, and they can always contact us at veteransinfo@alpa.org, and we provide guidance, mentorship, camaraderie, just to kind of get the word out, kind of help guys along. Me personally, I had a friend of mine who was a infantryman who was going through becoming a flight instructor and everything, and then he was working for PSA, gets out on OE, figures out he can't, he's having a hard time landing the 900. So he calls me up and says, hey, well, I can't do this. I'm having a hard time. I'm going to wash out. And I said, okay, what are you doing? Okay, this is how you land a 900. And he called me back the next week. Hey, OE complete. That worked. I was like, good. So
yeah,
veterans are really good at creating and thriving in their own little network.
Yeah, that's great that there's a support group for that. Now, obviously, ALPA has many, many different airlines that you guys cover. Does each individual airline have a little network for veterans?
They do. They've got every property has, majority of them have a veteran affairs committee that they can contact to get help with local at their airlines.
And what other things does ALPA do to help veterans?
Well, we do a lot of stuff with a lot of things that come across my desk from the veterans is a lot of Soldier Sailor Relief Act type things. A lot of guys, they leave the military, but they still want to serve, so they're in the Guard and in the Reserves, and you get a lot of chief pilots that have never served in the military, and they, well, you know, you got to do your drill days this on this date, and that's denied, and this, you know, so we get a lot of stuff regarding SCRA violations, stuff like that. So we help support that aspect of it.
This is Squawk 1200, and it's with Wireless Mike and Matthew. We're talking with Tim Kirschbaum of ALPA. Just as a reminder, where can we find ALPA? Where can we find you out on the grounds here at AirVenture this week?
So we're located just on the other side of Boeing Plaza. We got one of the big circus tents over there right next to Lift Aviation, or is it Lift Academy? Just right over there on the main drag, just adjacent to Boeing Plaza.
Wonderful. And what events, what kinds of discussions, what can we find there at your circus tent?
Okay, so in the mornings, we've got, we're doing different briefings. We got four different briefings we do, day in the life of a pilot, funding your airline career. I do a Vets to Jets brief, which goes a little more in depth onto how to fund your airline career path. And the other one is, can't remember what the fourth one is off the top of my head, but those start up at 10 o'clock in the morning. They go for about 30 minutes. Mine's the last one that starts at 12 o'clock. And then for ALPA members, we're doing dinners each night this week.
What about former ALPA members, for some of us who had to go someplace else?
Well, are you still paying your non-active dues?
I'm at a different in a different union at this point.
I don't think that organization that starts with an I will card will work.
Literally on opposite ends of the table here, folks.
We work together. Excellent. And for all the members who are coming, I'm sorry, what was the dinner at?
The dinner's in the circus tent each night. We've got it catered every night. I think tonight United is sponsoring tonight's dinner. But yeah, it'll be over the dinner tent or over at our tent. We got a whole section off. We can hold up to 84 people at a time. If you come by about 6 o'clock and get in line, you'll get an early seat. And then as people come out, once we're at capacity, once people come out, we'll bring more people in.
Do they have to sign up for tickets ahead of time for that, or you just show up?
We tried tickets last year. It didn't work out so well. So this year we're advising everybody just show up.
Yep. Show up and show up early.
Yep.
Excellent.
And for those of our friends, and just real quick, that are not here at the convention, how can they get in touch with ALPA? How can they get in touch with you?
If they want to get in touch with me specifically, you can get a hold of me at tim.kirschbaum@alpa.org. If you want to get a hold of your veterans, veteransinfo.org. If you're one of the unfortunate souls that is on furlough right now, they know how to get a hold of the furlough committee at furlough@alpa.org. And you can find us on the World Wide Web, of course.
All right. Well, we have been joined by Tim Kirschbaum from ALPA, and we appreciate you coming in, and you're listening to EAA Radio.